It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shop Podcast, episode 357. I am your host, Adam Mangum. Kyle Van Noy won his second Super Bowl, and Matt and I talk about his turnaround from bust with the Detroit Lions to the starting linebacker on a two-time Super Bowl champion. Also on the show, men's basketball might be turning a slight corner, Zach Wilson might be hurt, and cereal might be a soup? This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. You can support us at patreon.com/riseandshout, and you can listen to us right now. Matt, it was cold in Minnesota last week.
The polar vortex of some sort, huh?
Yeah, on Twitter, Shane McDougald?
McDougald. Yeah, that's how you say that.
That's at McDougald Shane on Twitter. And you can tweet
us. Very clever. Very clever, Shane.
Yeah, very clever. At BYU_RiceShout. So this would be our first Tweetbag question.
Tweetbag. Sorry, I was taking a drink. You pulled that out while I was taking a drink.
I don't know you're taking a drink. We're doing this over Skype, dude. Jeez, I can't even see you.
Come on, man. Come on.
Idiot.
You set me up to fail.
That's true. He asked me, did you experience the polar vortex? Because I was concerned for your safety and well-being. Hashtag Tweetbag. Hashtag climb on in. Hashtag Guam. Hashtag family frozen. I'm not sure I get all these hashtags, but...
The Guam one, I think, is a miscommunication. Shane is a friend of mine.
Oh.
And what did I text him? Because he actually texted me concerned about your safety.
Oh, and I was in Guatemala.
Did I say you were in Guam? Maybe I said you were in Guam. Maybe that was a spell check issue.
Maybe that was a spell check. I was in Guatemala. Or as they say that...
Guatemala.
Guate. So I was there. So I actually missed the polar vortex entirely. I was in Guatemala and Tennessee for business. And
yeah, that's great for the old marriage.
My poor family, they canceled school 4 days last week, which my daughter's middle school science teacher said in his 30 years of teaching middle school science in Minnesota, he had never had as more than 2 days canceled in a row. And there was four.
It's the polar vortex.
It's the polar vortex. It was crazy cold. Not that I would know. Because I wasn't there.
Because you're wearing shorts and a t-shirt in Guatemala.
So I appreciate, Shane, your concern. I was fine. My family was freezing. It's like the house is so cold. Like there's, even though there's good insulation and everything, there's just cold air coming through the walls.
I saw pictures people took where frost was forming in corners inside their house and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. It was crazy cold. It's basically, but before you complain too loud, it's like all of Canada. Like not all of Canada. But you know, Manitoba, Saskatchewan. It's like that. All right.
So you're saying it's the bad? So we've got bad weather coming in from Canada?
Yeah.
That's where the polar vortex came from?
It's all Canadian imports, man.
We've got to do something about this. I think we should just build a wall.
We should. We're worried about
the polar vortex out.
That's right. We're worried about the wrong border.
It's going to have to be at least twice that size.
And it's a much longer border, right? So
mountainous.
It'll be crazy. Matt, you tweeted something that I want to talk about.
Yes.
To start here. Now, you tweeted about a week ago, maybe a little bit less, that my kids... Is this your first appearance in the tweet bag?
I guess it is. I didn't mean to put this in the tweet bag. I did, didn't I?
You tweeted it at the BYU...
First-time tweet bagger. Look at me. Yeah, long-time listener, first-time tweet bagger.
Long-time co-host, first-time tweet bagger. My kids have moved on from the is a hot dog a sandwich debate because it's not, so they've moved on because they know.
No, they all call a hot dog a sandwich because I'm raising my children correctly.
I think that's wrong on many accounts. But anyway, we are now debating whether or not cereal is a soup. Is cereal a soup? This is the dumbest thing we've talked about. And I can't believe that you guys, cereal is not a soup. Cereal is dry matter with milk poured on it.
It's okay, well, define soup then. Define soup.
Oh my gosh.
Milk serves as the broth.
Oh my gosh. You're so messed up. You're so messed up with this stuff. You're making it so complicated. Soup is soup. Okay.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, on the poll that I put out with this tweet, the results were 91% no, cereal is not a soup.
Of course, because our listeners are not morons.
But there was some gold. Gold. It's gold, Jerry.
Gold, Jerry. Gold.
There was some gold that came back. Can I read some of the replies?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That
please,
I got to
please,
this?
Please.
All right. Jake Welch at BYU All Blue replies, if your cereal is soup, then you are using way too much milk.
Good point. Pretty good point, sir.
But this right here, this one might be my favorite. Okay. Jared Tippetts, who's at JTip with two P's, JTIPP. He replies with a question. Jared asks, is a corn dog a popsicle?
that was my favorite one.
So that's like, I almost made a new poll out of that.
No, a corn dog is not a popsicle, moron.
So Josh.
Come on, Matt. You're killing me here.
I think that was kind of Jared's point.
He was making fun of you.
Yes, he was. This is not his first time making fun of me.
Nice job, Jared.
Josh at Blue22 says, cold soup sucks. Cereal does not suck. Cereal is not soup.
How can you refute that logic?
That's very good logic. It's very well pieced together.
Yeah.
And then Taylor at TaylorMadeKook closes this out with, and this was also a pretty good one, it's milk with croutons. That's not soup.
All right. Well, Matt, let's move on from cereal not being soup.
Popsicle. That's delicious.
Yeah, it's
See, delicious. We've been doing it wrong all this time. We've been cooking the corn dogs.
Oh, my gosh. You just made me throw up in my mouth. All right, Matt, it's time to do the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, men's volleyball, unfortunately, had a rough week. They lost six straight sets against UCSB. Good UCSB team, fell to number 7, and they've got a tough week coming up. Two top 5 opponents on the road to open up a conference play against Pepperdine and UCLA. So I'm still very optimistic about this team, but this was obviously not the way they wanted to spend this last weekend.
Yeah, it didn't go according to plan, but it'll be all right. This is not like a – this isn't devastating.
No, they lost to a good team. But in kind of dramatic way, so we'll see how they respond this week against Pepperdine and UCLA. Women's basketball similarly had, after that long winning streak, they dropped 2 games against on the road to Loyola Marymount and Pepperdine. They will be at home against St. Mary's and Pacific this week, trying to get it back on track there as well. So Matt, I decided, how do we talk about the Super Bowl this week? Because as two Pats fans who host a BYU sports podcast, basically, let's say this straight up. Everyone hates our guts.
Yes, they do.
Everyone hates our guts, right? And no one wants to hear us
Nobody
gloat.
Wants to talk about it.
Nobody wants to gloat.
I want to gloat. No one just wants just no, nobody wants,
wants
to listen.
Listen to you gloat. Well, I want to listen to you gloat. But nobody else. So let's focus it on Tweetbag Questions and Kyle Van Hoy.
Okay? Yes!
All right. So, Dave Broderick on Facebook, and if you want to tweet at us, if you want to Facebook at us, you can do that at facebook.com/RisingShot. Yeah, I did. Why not?
That's weird.
Dave Broderick says, let's bet that this week's podcast will consist of at least 15 minutes of Tom Brady talk. Get your votes in. I'll take the over. I'd take the under there, Dave, because we're not going to talk much about Tom Brady.
Taking the under, Dave. I should have taken Dave up on that bet.
But I may or may not be wearing a Tom Brady GOAT t-shirt.
Yes.
May or may not. We can neither confirm nor deny that, Dave. Keith Smith says, which game was more fun to watch, the Idaho Potato Bowl or Super Bowl? Hashtag Super Sunday Nap. So was the game boring? I can't tell you guys if the game was boring, because it's not boring if it's your team. Right.
Right. See, that's I've had this conversation probably 4,000 times in the past 2 days. I loved watching that game. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Me too.
I thought it was a lot of fun. But nobody I talked to that is not a Patriots fan enjoyed it. But there were some really cool matchups that were going on, right? I mean, you're talking about maybe the best defensive front in football out of L.A., and how are they going to deal with that and try and contain Aaron Donald and Dominican Sue you look at what the Rams were trying to do defensively, and how is Gurley going to work into the game plan, and how's Goff going to react, and you've got, like this hot up-and-coming coach from L.A., against, Darth Sidious or whatever anybody want, the rest of the NFL wants to call him. But there were some pretty cool things to watch there. But defensive football, I understand if you're not into the teams, especially defensive games like this, they just don't seem to.
I thought the two defensive game plans were ingenious.
Yes.
I thought the way the Rams defended the Patriots was really well done. They decided to give Edelman up and shut down everything else. Now, that didn't totally work out for them because the run game got them a little bit. But the Patriots totally changed their defense once the playoffs came and played this, like, eight-man-up defense and tight-man coverage. And it was they hadn't played that all year. And they did it against the Chargers, the Chiefs, and then the Rams. And it worked. So, I mean, I get it though. 13-3 game, 3-3 game for a lot of it.
And it was, you get that first touchdown late. I mean, it's.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. If it hadn't been my team, now Sweeney makes his first appearance.
Sweeney,
not his last, by the way. That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He said, "Did Ty Detmer become offensive coordinator for the Rams for the Super Bowl?" Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag. I'm a jerk bag. I'm sorry. I was gonna say, I'm a jerk a bag. And
please say your name after the beep, David. It's a boy.
Yeah. And hashtag holy bad offense, Batman. I don't know what it's hard for me to grasp what happened with the Rams. I mean, obviously the Patriots did a good job, but they've been so good offensively all year.
Gurley's got to be hurt, right? I know they're still saying that he's not, but he's hurt.
If he's not, then they all need to be fired, right?
I mean, he's got to be hurt.
Because he's one of the best players in the league. Well, he's hurt. The question is, how recovered is he, right? But he touched the ball 30 times a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Was that the divisional round, right? He didn't touch it a lot in the NFC Championship, but I don't know. Gurley's amazing, and when he did touch the ball, he was electric the few couple times he did. So I don't know. So let's talk about Kyle Van Noy, Matt. 3 years with the Patriots, 3 Super Bowls. But this time, unlike the last time he was on a winning one, Kyle Van Noy's a big part of this defense, right?
He's wearing the green dot.
Yeah. He calls the plays. He's involved. He's all those things. But Jeremy Ashton via email, and if you want to email us, you can do it at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. He says, rank the most impactful current NFL players from BYU. Van Noy's got to be at the top of the list, right?
Oh, yeah, he's got to be at the top of the list.
So who's next? Sorensen. Jamal, third? Or Taysom?
I think you go Jamal and then Taysom.
And then Michael Davis?
Yeah, but Michael Davis, you give him another year, and I think Michael Davis could crack up into that top 3-4.
Yeah, and then John Denny somewhere still snapping. I don't know if he'll be.
He's going to snap until the end of time.
Yeah, he's there forever. I just look at this, and you look at Van Noy's career, and it's an amazing arc because he never really got it going at Detroit, right? He had a total of, I don't know, 30 940 tackles in three seasons. And, yeah, had some injuries, too. And then, you know, 2.5 seasons, call it, with Detroit. And then becomes a starter and, you know, not a pro bowler, necessarily all-pro kind of guy, but a above-average contributor for the Patriots, including, you know, getting the Super Bowl three times. I mean, that's kind of an amazing... I mean, he came in as a second-round draft pick, so, right... He was an amazing college player, but it's amazing the turnaround he's had so far in the last three seasons.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that has got to go to the fact that the Detroit Lions are a mess, right? I can't take credit for this joke. I read it on Twitter, but in 2016, the Detroit Lions traded Van Noy for a six-round draft pick and a bag of footballs, and he hasn't missed a Super Bowl since, right? I mean, the guy doesn't go from... You know, I guess by the 2016 season, he was starting, right? He was playing a lot. But in 2015, he had sat behind Tahir Whitehead, who doesn't even play for the Lions anymore, is with the Raiders.
Was a starter on a terrible football team.
Yeah, well, and it's silly, right? I mean, like, who is Tahir Whitehead? You know, I mean... It's crazy to me how the Lions just squandered Kyle Van Noy, and I know it's tough. He had a rough start with the early injury and surgery and missed some weeks and all of this, and it's tough in the league to do that. But like to go from that whole situation to 2016, he goes to the Patriots and he's contributing, and then in 2017 he becomes a starter.
Right.
You know, it's just
and
it's
leads
crazy
the team in tackles in 2018. You know, has one sack in his 2.5 years with Detroit, and he's had 10 sacks in his time with 2.5 years with New England, right? I mean, it's as if Detroit had no idea they drafted him in the second round because he was good in college, and I wonder. You know, we talked about this a year ago with our draft expert guy that comes on, Emory Hunt, and he said, you know, you'll have a scouting department that falls in love with the guy, right? And so he goes up the draft board, and I wonder if this was what happened with Van Noy, because everybody's, you know, he's so good, but the coaches then get him and they don't know what to do with him, right? It's not their guy; it was the scouts' guy, right? And that's where I think you said Detroit's a mess. That's why Detroit's a mess. Or a lot of these organizations are a mess, is that it's not cohesive, right? It's you draft Kyle Van Noy because he's good, and then the other group, they don't know what to do with him. The fact that he had one sack in 2.5 seasons, Kyle Van Noy is great in the backfield, right? He almost ended that game against Kansas City. I mean, he was one step away from taking Mahomes down, and there wouldn't have been an overtime, right? And I think that's, you look at that and you go, well, why couldn't he have done that in Detroit? Well, because they didn't know how to use him, right?
Well, what's crazy is he had, if you look at his solo tackles, right, and you even count the second half of the season he plays in 2016 in New England where he only starts two games. Okay, so for the 2014, 2015, 2016 season, he walks out of there with a combined like 40 solo tackles. And then 2017 and 2018, where he's starting basically every game for New England, he cracks 55 both years.
Right.
I mean, it's just the turnaround is insane, right? I mean, he only started two games in the back half of that 2016 season in New England and had 27 combined totals, combined tackles between solo and assisted tackles, which is more than he had had in starting seven games in Detroit the first half of the year, which I think goes back to your point. They had no idea how to use him.
They didn't know where
and
to put
him. They had the right counterpiece on the defensive line, right?
The I mean, same guy he had played with.
They had the one-two punch.
Yeah, and they couldn't figure it out. So anyway, congrats to Kyle Van Noy and the New England Patriots and Dave, Tom Brady. And Tom Brady. But that'll be the end of that. All right. In case you hadn't heard, we are on Patreon. Matt, what is Patreon? It's a site where you can go and support our podcast. We have, I believe, 6 patrons. Look at that. We're a big deal. We're a big deal. But anyway, you can go support the podcast. This is not something we are requiring, not something that we're that we say you need to do. The podcast is free. It will always be free. But I think this is an opportunity for those of you that want to support the podcast. You can do it. At some point later this year, towards football season, we'll have some cool other options there for folks to potentially win things and or get some levels, if you will. And I think who's our newest one? Chase Blyle, is he our newest one? Or I think it's Dan Roach. I can't remember. Anyway, Pat's on there. Pat Hammond's on there. These are our patrons, folks. And Sweeney, of course. So anyway, if you want to check that out, go to patreon.com/riseandshout. All right. Back to the show. Matt, let's talk a little bit about basketball here. It was an interesting week for basketball. Since we talked, actually, because it's been 2 weeks, beat St. Mary's, lost to Gonzaga, beat LMU. You look at that, and it's kind of a mixed bag, if you will. But actually, I think it was a pretty good couple weeks for men's basketball. I mean, the loss to Gonzaga was big and dramatic. But you know, you pick up 2 wins against, in the case of St. Mary's, a good team. Let's go to Jeremy Ashton. I had an email question. Does beating St. Mary's have any impact on your perspective for this year's basketball team? At least we are not Hot Rock Bottom. Matt needs to do an encore performance of Randy Bennett being Hot Rock Bottom. So, Matt, does this change your perspective on the men's basketball team?
A little bit, but not really. It is a big win. It's an unexpected win for me. Where it's, if they can do that again in the tournament, then I think that'll be a really big deal, right? Because that gives them an opportunity to get deeper in that tournament than anybody would expect them to. So I guess it does change my perspective in the sense that now I believe that they could pull this off in Las Vegas. Whereas before the win against St. Mary's, I would have said no way.
So you look at their last 4 games, okay? 3 of them are at home. And the one road game is San Francisco, and they lost, right? And they lost to Gonzaga. They beat St. Mary's at home. They beat LMU at home. And the LMU game is probably closer than it need to be, but we can get to that here in a second. I don't know that it changes how I feel about this team unless they run the table until Gonzaga in a few weeks, right? Then towards the end of February. I think if they can beat San Francisco at home and not lose to any of these other mediocre teams, at this point, it's one good data point. It's the best win of the season, right? The St. Mary's win. It's their signature win against a very good St. Mary's team. So that's good. But it's not as if all of a sudden it makes them a bubble team, right? And I don't know what, besides maybe running the table the rest of the season, might at least make them interesting, right? If you beat Gonzaga on the road or something, which we've done before with a better team probably. I'll tell you what makes me feel better about this team even more than that is Emery's performance against Loyola Marymount. He'd been almost a zero since he came back, right? And against Loyola Marymount, we have Hawes and Child struggle, right? Don't score a lot of points. And you get Baxter and Nick Emery step up and score 42 points between the two of them. You have some great defense. So do I feel better about this team than I did last time we recorded 2 weeks ago? Yes. But is it like a sea change? No, it's like a good step in the right direction type of change.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way to characterize it.
Yeah, yeah. So Gary Payne had a question. That's at FastBreakGP on Twitter. I may be too late. Not sure what time you record. You're not too late, Gary. We're able to catch this one. Gavin Baxter.
In there, Gary.
That's right. Gavin Baxter, an example of Dave Rowe's inability to see talent or good grooming of freshman talent to let him develop through the season. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Also, we can only handle like around 5 minutes of Patriots gloating. I think we went over that. But mostly it was about Van Noy.
There wasn't gloating. There was legitimate discussion about Kyle Van Noy.
That's right. And we all love Kyle Van Noy. So to his question about Baxter, Matt. Obviously, for Baxter, this is, you know, career game, 25 points, 10 rebounds, a couple of blocks, including one when the game was, you know, Loyola was trying to do a little bit of a comeback, and it was a really good block, really good defensive play. Does this mean Rose waited too long to make him a bigger contributor, or is this Rose developing a guy? Or do we not know?
I don't think we know, but it has the feeling to me of a freshman who has kind of come along and then was ready when the time was right and the opportunity was given to him. Now, there's no way that we will ever know whether or not Gavin Baxter would have had that type of performance had he been playing these type of minutes earlier in the season. We've got no real way of knowing that. But it does seem to kind of, like, the common sense, the least complicated explanation here is that Gavin Baxter was a freshman, and he wasn't ready to do this at the beginning of the season. Now he's kind of gotten into a rhythm, figured things out, and now he's in there. But, man, he looks good.
Yeah, he looked really good against Loyola Marymount. Everybody looked bad against Gonzaga, so we're not going to hold that game against him. And he looked good against St. Mary's, right? His numbers weren't as eye-popping, but he had 10 points and 5 boards in 27 minutes, right? And he's averaging over 20 minutes a game since that Pepperdine game when he kind of cracked into the lineup. Now, he did play more at the beginning and then disappeared right in the back half of the non-conference schedule, playing, you know, 3 minutes here, 2 minutes there, and things like that. But these last 5 games, he's clearly come on. And I agree with you. I don't know if we're going to know if it would have been a bigger impact earlier in the season. Have they played him more? I mean, he didn't play much in that losing string right against Houston, Illinois State, and Weber State. That was kind of felt like the death of the season, right?
Right, but that's right. What people want to know, right? Is, well, if he'd been doing this down that stretch, maybe we wouldn't be in the situation we're in right now. But yeah.
I don't know.
That's a pretty serious armchair quarterback at that point.
Yeah,
because you just don't know.
I don't have enough data to do it, right, to change that. So let's look, Matt, at a question that Sweeney says is, raise your hand if you can shoot better threes than most of the Cougars this year. I cannot.
I feel like, I see what you did there, Sweeney, but yeah, I can't do that.
So right now, 3-point shooting field goal percentage, BYU.
Than any player on the team? Hold on.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Oh, then any player on the team? Evan Troy is 0-for-1. I could go 0-for-1. 0%.
I could go 1-for-1. I might go 1-for-1 on a given day.
Let's see. Who's taken the most and not been good?
Taylor Mon is 0-for-3. Colby Lee is 1-for-4.
Nixon 1-for-16. Hartnett is 10-for-44. I've said this since the beginning of the year. I don't like him shooting threes. Now, he hasn't done that a whole lot lately. That's mostly shots from earlier in the season. You know,
but if I took 24 three-pointers, could I hit 8 of them? Probably not. But if I took 16, could I hit 2 and beat Dalton Nixon? Maybe.
Right. Well, I mean, you just look at it. We're 3-point shooting percentage is 32.2%. It's 283rd in the country. That's not good.
Is that bad?
I'm not.
Is that bad?
We also don't. We're also kind of middle of the pack.
283 out of how many?
300 something. So.
Yeah, okay, so that's.
So it's not good. It's not 283 out of 1,000.
I know it's not advanced statistics, but I just wanted to give us a little bit of context.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's bad.
Anyway, the defense looked a little bit better this last couple of weeks. Emery gives me a little bit of hope. Baxter giving me a little bit of hope. This is still not a good season, right? And barring running the table or somehow winning the WCC conference tournament, I don't know that that St. Mary's game, it makes it better, but it doesn't. It's not like we're doing a 180 here on this season.
Right.
So let's talk football here for a second, because, well, you know, we love talking football.
Who doesn't like to talk about football?
Okay, this one, I'll be honest, this one was like a shocker. Zach Wilson has shoulder surgery. Okay, so.
Yeah, where did, this comes out of nowhere.
Multiple media reports, they saw him at the basketball game with a sling, and according to Jay Drew, friend of the podcast, Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune, he had surgery on his throwing shoulder last month, so January sometime, to correct a condition that has plagued him since high school, and he will not participate in contact drills in spring camp next month. Decided with doctors that it was his best interest long term to have the surgery a few weeks ago. So anyway, that's what we know. And we get asked by Bren Butterfield on Facebook, do you think Wilson's surgery is going to hinder his ability? And Jeremy Ashton via email, from Zero to McMahon, how concerned are you that Wilson was seen wearing a sling at last Saturday's basketball game? I have no idea how to react to this, man, because I don't even know what the issue is.
Yeah, it's scary, though. I mean, it's scary. I don't know what else to say.
Guys have surgery all the time.
They cut open his throwing shoulder, like with.
If there wasn't some scar tissue, do you care?
Why do you?
It's uncomfortable. It causes pain. I mean, there's a lot of explanations here that are not serious. There are a lot of explanations here that are very serious. I don't know what they are, though. So why am I? I'm not gonna lose a lot of sleep over this one, to be honest, because I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but I'm going to lose a lot of sleep over this because I don't know what it is.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I have this for the same reason.
Okay, so let's say, okay, spring football, he's not going to do contract drills, okay? What are the chances that he's not our starting quarterback next fall? Assuming that this surgery is not a hindrance to his ability.
I think the chances, assuming that the surgery doesn't mess him up, I think the chance is small that he's not the starting quarterback.
Very small, right? Okay. Hall obviously is a talented guy, and there's some people in the program that are very high on him. And we've talked about on previous shows that maybe Hall could pressure him for the starting job, right? And if Hall plays really, really awesome in spring, then maybe in the fall camp, Wilson has an actual competition on his hands, right? But we all know this is true in most college football programs. Starting quarterbacks typically don't get unseated unless they play poorly in games or get hurt, right? Typically. That's not always true, but that is most often the case. Wilson, I'm just going to assume he's the starter for next year and he's going to be healthy until somebody tells me different. And I'm not going to worry too much about it.
But here's part of this whole thing that does worry me, and this is just a little nugget that Jay Drew, you know, buries in this story is. So he's not going to participate in contact drills, but it sounds like he will throw. Or I've heard conflicting reports on whether or not he's going to throw. Pretty clear he's not going to participate in contact. But you've got Jaren Hall, right? Who everybody says, oh, he's the guy that could push, you know. Could push Zach for the starting spot, but Jaren is going to be practicing with the baseball team, so he may not be around for all of spring practice. So now you've got your top two guys who aren't fully participating in spring ball. Like, is that a problem?
We don't know. Stop it. It's a throwaway comment in Drew's article. He doesn't know if Hall's going to be. He's participating with the baseball team. He doesn't know if he's going to be in spring camp or not. It even says that. I don't.
The whole thing's got me on edge.
Grimes said in that same article, we will still see him most of, if not all, in spring practice. I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about it till this starts. And if he can't throw in spring, then there's reason to worry. Seeing him in a sling and that he had some surgery that we don't know what it is, like, this feels like there's no news, so we're gonna panic type of thing to me. It doesn't feel.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm just gonna panic.
No, that's what you're doing. So we're recording on Tuesday night. Signing day is tomorrow. We're gonna go over all of the recruiting stuff next week, the list and who we're excited about, all that stuff, right? But I wanted to hit a few things tonight before we move on, which is J. Drew had an article in the Tribune as well about the fact that basically BYU is still trying to find Matt. It's your biggest fear about the 2019 BYU football team offensively is they're trying to find running backs. And right now they've got 4-8 scholarships or a dozen preferred walk-ons that could be coming onto the program beyond the 14 recruits who have signed national letters of intent already. Looking at this, Matt, does this make you less worried, same level of worried, or more worried than you were, you know, at the end of the season as far as running back depth is concerned?
I'm just as worried as I was before. But I think that there was a report that Emmanuel Isukpa is trying to get enrolled in a graduate program.
Right.
And he's a guy that could come in and play right away. But yeah, he's not, you know, on these lists of what we're expecting to see tomorrow. So that makes me a little bit nervous, but yeah, they've got to figure this out. I mean, this is a problem that needs to be solved.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And the problem is they may have solved it and we don't know it yet because it won't be announced till tomorrow. So listeners might be listening to this and go, well, they signed three guys, right? And or whatever else. But it may not be because, you know, a grad transfer type of thing may be a little bit more, may take a little bit more time. They do mention, Drew does mention at the bottom of his article about the running backs that they, Alex Fitz, who played for Scottsdale Community College last year, he's a 5'10", 195-pound back. It will be a preferred walk-on, and there'll be a bunch of preferred walk-ons, Matt. And there's another article in the Deseret News by, I think it was Tyler Christensen, about how basically they're going to have a bunch of preferred walk-ons, maybe the most that BYU has ever had. And in this article, they talk about a couple of running backs. They talk about some defensive players, and some of whom probably had opportunities to get scholarships at lesser programs or different divisions that are going to play instead for BYU. What do you make of this preferred walk-on? Like, is this just kind of a strange convergence, and it just happens to be a bunch? Or, I mean, what do you make out of this?
I don't know. See, there's part of me that says, yeah, this is just a strange convergence, and you're getting a bunch of these at one time. But another thing, as I looked at this, and you look through these names and the positions, and you read a little bit about these guys that are on this list of preferred walk-ons, and you go back to what happened towards the end of last season, where there was this I don't want to use the term resurgence, but there was this like explosion of youth. All these young guys that were playing and had worked their way up to starting jobs or meaningful minutes, and we weren't necessarily even excited about all of these guys, right? I think there's at least one of them that like questioned why he was ever on the field, but there was this big surge of youth of guys that were earning spots, right? Right. And when you look at what a preferred walk-on is and what they come in to do and try and prove, like really, what are these guys all working for towards? They're all working towards is they want to get a scholarship.
Right.
And so you bring in a bunch of these young, hungry guys, and it's the bread and butter of how – and I've said this 100 times of how I think Kalani Sitake is going to be successful here. He's got to find that middle-of-the-pack player who's a good fit for BYU, wants to be there, who has some upside that the coaching staff can coach out of him, can get him to perform at a level that is higher than expectations. That is how this program becomes successful. You get a every few years you get a you get a Taysom Hill or you get a Kyle Van Noy or you get a Jamal Williams. You have these I don't know, some of those guys are kind of run once in a generation, but you get a superstar or two. Right on every team, but the rest of them, you just got to have them play above their perceived ability. And maybe that's what this is. Maybe this is a bunch of guys that they feel like in somewhere in here there's a treasure that is hidden that's going to come out and surprise everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I mean I don't know. It's interesting. There was another article kind of related to that that's by a friend of the podcast, Dick Harmon, about the culture. And this came out earlier today about the culture that Sitake is trying to create. And there's some interesting tidbits in this article, Matt, and I'd like us to talk about it a little bit. For example, this is one where, let me scroll down to it. I had it marked here. In November, after the loss to Boise State, this is quoting from the article now, Sitake called in every player who had served a two-year mission for The Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints and asked that they elevate themselves and example to teammates. He was specific about language and the type of music that was played around team functions. And he even personalized it, Harmon says, by saying that he wouldn't have gone on his mission had it not been for the influence of a few of the return missionaries that he played with when Sitake was on the BYU football team. And there's other things here about academics and different things here. And these are stories I hadn't heard before. What do you make of this? Is this, again, it's right before signing day. There's not a lot of news now with the early signing day. Most of the class is established. There'll be a few new guys added tomorrow. What do you take of this article on the culture and maybe some of the changes and or the emphasis that Sitake gave?
The thing that I found most interesting in what is in this article is that this flies in the face of what has become a real popular narrative among BYU fans. It's a little bit of like a pile on the coaching staff thing, that the culture is way too loose, that everybody's just hanging out and having fun, and Sitake's just like bringing in all of his friends. And but what we see here is that's even if that maybe there was some of that at some point, but that's clearly not what's going on now, right? So there's the stuff that you cited around these conversations they had here, but I think that it sounds like at the beginning of this winter semester he talks about a team meeting where he talks about the honor code and tells everybody that if there's not an improvement in the classroom for some of these guys, scholarships are going to be in jeopardy. He went to even the guys who were doing well in school. And asked them to help their teammates and, I mean, really challenged these guys to step it up in some of these other areas. And I think that speaks to what he's trying to do is get these kids to focus, right? And to learn to focus and prioritize the stuff they have to take care of so that they can be dialed in to what they have to do when they're on the field, whether that be in practice or around games. And if they've got the rest of this stuff squared away and everybody, I think there's something to be said for that. But there's clearly and if it's a shift, it's a shift. But clearly at this point, Sitake is trying to drive in some discipline and focus into the program. And if you look at, it talks about what had happened since that loss at Boise State. I mean, I think there's been some results.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I don't, these type of articles are really always hard for me to dissect what it means, right? Like, is that an actual moment where something has changed in the program for Sitake as a coach, for some of these players, Or is it just a story? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know what it means today. I think Satake, you know, just from his post-game interviews and coaches show and stuff, I think he thought they had had a turning point in the program with Wisconsin, with the win, right? And then it didn't seem to be after some tough losses later, right? I think he's still finding himself as a coach. And I know that's annoying to people, but I don't know that it's any different than Lavelle or Bronco or almost any other coach in their first coaching gig. And some of them find themselves quicker than others. Some of them have success on the field while they're still finding themselves. And I think Satake is still finding out what he thinks is going to be the most important aspects to the culture he's creating, right? Because this wasn't his first season, right? And he's making these emphasis on, you know, the honor code and return missionaries being a good influence and different things. And again, this will endear him. These type of stories will endear him to BYU leadership and church leadership, right? Because in the end, mostly they care about other things besides winning football games. I don't know how the fans will react to this. I think some fans who don't like Satake are going to see this as he's losing focus on football, right? And people that like Satake go, this is why we hired the guy. He's going to be great for these kids, and he's going to win football games, right? So I think this is the type of story that's going to be used by both those who think we should get rid of him and those who think he should be signed to like a, you know, lifetime extension. So,
but at the end of the day, I don't care what he does, just win football games. Right? Well, okay, maybe I shouldn't say it that way, because if the program is a mess and people are like, you know, if this is like the, you know, what cost Croton his job, right? We don't want to see those types of things. But whatever things he's got to do to put these kids in a position to win football games, I don't care I don't care what that looks like.
Right.
Just go win games.
There are different paths to success, right? You can be Nick Saban, you can be Dabo Sweeney, you can be Tony Dungy, you can be Bill Belichick, right? They don't all look the same, the paths to success. Just find a path to success, right?
And get this team on it.
Yeah, for sure. So, Matt, let's talk about the college football playoff here for a second. Ryan Crockett has an email for us, and I'm going to paraphrase his email. Basically, he's wondering about crowning a champion. And actually, you and I have talked about this with our brother Don before. He says, when people say they deserve to be in to the playoff or the NCAA basketball tournament, but didn't make it, they're already on the bubble. Isn't it the express purpose of the tournament to decide who the number one team is in the country? If you're on the bubble, you're clearly not the number one team. Saying it that way, few people might make the argument, but isn't that what they're saying? This really comes down to the purpose of the postseason. Is it for the players, or is it to just make money, or do we actually get a champion? How does this change with playoff systems? Hashtag go Cougs. Matt, any first thoughts on Ryan's thought on playoff systems? Because we had talked a few weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, about, you know, expanding the system, keeping it the same, and what that means. And I think Ryan's replying to our thoughts on that.
So in my opinion, and this is I believe this is the comment that he's alluding to, in my opinion, we should put together a college football playoff that grabs anybody who is legitimately the best team in the country and puts them in a tournament, right? So I don't think you need 16 college football teams to do that, right? I think you might be able to do it with 8.
You might already be there with 4.
Maybe, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure that you are. But anyway, but the idea is, if you come to his question, I agree that the purpose of the tournament or the college football playoff should be to decide who the very best team is. So anybody who you think legitimately might be the best team in the country, who could beat any of the other 3-4 teams or the other 7-8 teams should be on the list and should get in there, right? But is that really the purpose? Is that really what college football is after? No. College football is trying to make money. That's what it is, right? And it's not – and so you might say to yourself, oh, well, if it's about making money, this is easy. Just make a giant playoff, like 16 teams like the NFL or something, and play a bunch of playoff games, and you're going to make a ton of money. The problem is they make a ton of money with the current system. And so moving from the current system, which they know generates a bunch of revenue, into something else, there's part of why – this is why they're being so cautious and slow about it, right? Is you don't want to mess it up. And so – you know, while I believe that they could make a ton of money with an expanded playoff, I understand why people are hesitating around the shift from a money standpoint, especially since the people who are in power to make those decisions might not be the people who would be making the money in a playoff situation 10, 20 years from now, the way it would likely evolve, right? So if you're the Rose Bowl, this is why you hold on to New Year's Day and all these things, because this is where you're making your dollar. But I understand what he's saying. This whole concept of people deserve to be in. If you don't have a legitimate shot at winning the whole thing, I don't think there is a deserve to be in. Now, the NCAA tournament has expanded to the point where, you know, you're putting a whole layer of teams in, a layer and a half of teams in, that statistically have zero shot of even getting to the next round, right? But why did – so they didn't expand because those teams were legitimate title contenders. They expanded in order to generate cash.
So the tournaments are a terrible way to decide who the best team is, right? They're not – you want to decide who the best team is. You play a bunch of games, have everybody play a similar schedule, right? And this is how baseball used to be organized back in the day, right? You'd have 162 games. Everybody in each league played each other the same amount, and then the two champions of those two leagues played in a World Series. I mean, this is decades ago, right? But that decided who the best team was. You had 162 games to decide, right? The problem in college football, even pro football, and certainly college basketball with 300-something teams is, how are you going to do that and determine who the best team is, right? And to say UCF doesn't deserve a chance because they didn't play the better schedule, there's certainly a legitimate argument, right? But the problem with that argument always is they didn't get a chance to play anybody, so maybe they are one of the best teams, right? And last year, they ended up beating a really good team in a bowl game, and maybe they were one of the best four teams. We'll never know, right? There's no way to actually know. And these tournaments aren't a great way to determine the quote-unquote best team. They're a really fun way to do it, though, right? Like, the NCAA basketball tournament is fun. Yes, it makes a ton of money, and you're absolutely right that they will eventually follow the Benjamins more than they will anything else. But college football has the same problem that pro football has, which is adding a bunch more games is problematic, right? You can increase revenue by doing that, but what do you give up? Do you give up health of the players because of a longer season? Do you have to take away some of the regular season, which means less revenue for the schools from potentially, you know, television contracts, ticket revenues? You know what I mean? Like, a bigger playoff 16 team, which I would love in football, I think it'd be fun, is problematic, like, logistically, to make it happen, right?
And the people who are making money today would stand to lose it, right? It's a balloon squeeze.
Maybe.
Some of the money you're making, I think it would. The fear is that it would evolve to something.
The bigger the pie, they're still the ones that are going to get. If they grow the pie, I think you're right that they believe that. I think they're wrong. They'll make more money. Right.
Yeah, but if you're not a New Year's Day type bowl, right? If you're like one of these middle of the pack bowls,
well, I don't give a crap about
you lose
bowls.
All you right, but you lose all control.
Bowls.
You lose all control,
and you're not going right. to. Yes, yes.
And sorry. The money, your money is walking out the
door. I was thinking teams and conferences. You're talking about the bowl games. I don't give a crap about the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl, whatever. I mean, it's a cool tradition, whatever. But sometimes even good traditions need to go away, and that's one that,
right, but
that
the Rose,
needs to go away.
But the Rose Bowl makes a bunch of money and can get in the ear of administration at Pac-12 schools and say, hey, look, like, remember the tradition,
right,
and all this of playing here, and you get to the nostalgia of these guys, you know, and that's how they're going to keep their hands on the money.
Yeah, sure. I eventually say 10 years from now, I'm not shocked if there is no Rose Bowl, right? Because eventually they don't make enough money, nor are they influential enough to end up standing in front of this in the end. I think what's really stopped this is the fact that the Power Five conferences, if you expand to 16 teams, you're going to be giving spots to people outside of the Power Five conferences, which means you're going to be giving them access. And look what that's done in college basketball. You can be Gonzaga and play for a championship. You can be Butler and play for a championship, right? If the Mountain West Conference has a guaranteed shot to a 16-team playoff, well, that changes things, doesn't it? Right? Like, that changes the dynamics of college football. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden Mountain West Conference is going to get a bunch of five-star recruits. But all of a sudden, it makes the Boise State, if you're a recruit, look a little bit different, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
100%.
Like, I could be a backup at USC, or I could start at Boise, and USC is probably going to finish third in the Pac-12 and not even make the playoff, and I could go to this 16-team playoff with Boise. Like, it changes everything, right? And it changes, and it has college basketball is way more egalitarian for a lot of reasons. But to his point, to Ryan's point, going back to his question, these tournaments are not the best way to determine a champion because there's way too much luck involved and there's way too much, you know, and you're discounting all of the regular season, right? Once you hit a tournament. The regular season got you seeded, but it doesn't actually help you having a great regular season. And if anything, it makes you a pariah if you lose before you're supposed to, right? In college football playoff, that's not true because there's just four teams. But certainly in the men's basketball tournament, right? If you're a number one seed that doesn't make it to the Sweet 16, your season is officially a massive disappointment, right? So, anyway.
Right.
Well, last thing, Matt, we're going to talk some TV because you asked for TV recommendations several weeks ago. And if Sweeney is nothing, if not tardy. So, Justin, thank you for responding to this like 2 months after
we talked about
TV shows. But he's got some recommendations for us. Justin does. All right. A few streaming options now that football is over and hoops is, well, he said poop emoji. The Office. 2005
really?
Called and they'd like their TV recommendation back.
Seriously, Justin? Sweeney? You think that I've not seen every single episode ever made
he
of
says,
The Office?
Yes, I'm way too late to this game, but it's hilarious. All right. And then he says, Making a Murderer. I have not seen that one.
I heard it's excellent.
I have heard that it's excellent. Suits. Again, that's not a new show, dude. Like, that's been on for some years. But okay, that's one. Staircase, I don't even know that one.
I've never heard of it.
And Innocent Man, hashtag tweetbag. So some recommendations there from Mr. Sweeney. He also then asks us an interesting question. What is the best TV comedy of all time? He lists Seinfeld, The Office. He also had in that tweet a GIF that is George Costanza posing on the couch in his boxers, which, thanks, Justin.
That's a great episode.
That is a great episode. Matt, do you have a favorite? I'm not going to say best because I don't even know what that means, right? How would you judge that? Do you have a favorite comedy series of all time?
So I really enjoy The Office. Do I want to say it's the best of all time? I don't know.
Is it your favorite, though? If you had to go to a desert island and you could only take one comedy series with you, would you take The Office to make you laugh? I'd
probably take The Office. I laughed pretty hard at Arrested Development.
Yeah,
I did really like Seinfeld.
I was a huge Seinfeld fan. I've watched more hours of Seinfeld than any other TV show probably ever. So I've watched that so many times. I love Seinfeld. I mean, just think about in the Colgate commercial during the Super Bowl. We didn't even talk about Super Bowl ads yet. They have, is it Luke Wilson? Right? Owen's brother in the Colgate commercial doing the Close Talker thing?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah, I remember
he
that.
He says he's a Close Talker. Like, that's from Seinfeld, right? Man hands, all that stuff. I don't know. My favorite is probably Seinfeld. I'd also have to give props. I know, obviously, for a lot of reasons, it's not going to be popular going forward, but The Cosby Show was hilarious. The Office is great. And I would have to say Small Wonder. I'm totally kidding. I thought I'd throw in some obscure, some ridiculously
Small Wonder.
Terrible show.
Yikes. Alf. What about Alf?
Alf!
Give me an Alf a shout out.
Hold on to your cats, people.
Are Charles in charge? What about Charles in charge?
Oh my gosh, Charles in charge. When the whole cast changes except for Charles.
Oh, that's great. Well, he's in charge. It doesn't matter. They can swap everybody else up.
They can do whatever they want.
Were there other people on that show other than Scott Baio? I didn't even notice.
What was Tony Danza's show?
Who's the Boss?
Who's the Boss? Oh, yeah.
That was a good one.
That's a classic. And if I look at ones that are on now that are still in the midst, we watch American Housewife. Have you watched that one?
No, I saw a commercial for it yesterday and thought, it looks like it could be funny.
It's funny. It's not in the same class as the ones we're talking about for all time or anything. But I have enjoyed that one. You mentioned Arrested Development is a classic, but I think that one's an acquired taste. It's not as.
I've acquired the taste.
Broad a appeal to it, I think, as, say, The Office.
Well, there's a classic, Cheers.
Cheers, yeah, sure.
But the best, one of my favorite lines of all time out of Cheers was, I'm going to mess up the names, I should pull this up here. But the main, what's her, Shelley Long, is that the actress's name?
Yeah. Well, one of the actresses.
She's lamenting that, men aren't romantic, and she says, why can't more men send flowers? And Ted Danson says, Mormons can't send flowers?
Yeah.
She says, no, I said Mormon. He's like, Mormons? No, I know they can't dance, but I think they can send flowers. It's a very funny exchange.
Another one from back there is Family Ties, Michael J. Fox.
Family Ties is good.
That's a good show. Was a good show. Speechless is another current one that's on. Minnie Driver is on that one.
Yep.
I enjoy that show quite a bit. I don't know if it's in that all-time classic mode. And I liked My Girl the first couple of seasons, but then I lost interest after that. It seemed like the same gags over and over again. And that's the thing. Comedy shows are tough, to keep it interesting and fresh. Even The Office towards the end, they lost me, right? They kind of lost me. Right. And to me, The Office was the best when I know everybody loves Jim Scott, but it was Dwight, not Jim Scott.
Wow. You got all sorts of confused on that one.
Yeah, I did.
Scott Carell, Michael Scott.
Michael Scott.
Steve Carell. Oh, my gosh. Now I'm doing it.
Is Jim versus Dwight. That made the series for me. Like, I'm a vampire. I put your stuff in Jello. I bring
my actor friend to pretend he's me.
Yeah, it's good for you for not seeing race, Dwight. The Office is quite good. Well, anyway, Matt.
Bears, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. Actually, my favorite line from that show ever is he's at the party, at a Dunder Mifflin party at the CFO's house or something. Dwight is. And he just turns to some random guy in the food line and says, "Do you watch Battlestar Galactica?" The guy says, "No." And then Dwight says, "Then you're an idiot." Oh, it's so good. So good. Anyway, Matt, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. As always, subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. We'll be back next week to talk about National Signing Day, and we'll go through the whole class and, heck, maybe we'll even have a guest for once. and talk about it. But I don't promise anything. I don't promise anything. And we still have to do the Dante's thing. I think we're 2 weeks out, Matt. Can you commit in 2 weeks? Can we do it?
I feel like we've really built this up. Like, our preparation for this thing has got to be on point.
Yeah, yeah. Like we'll need to at least prepare some.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ryan Crockett, who's emailed us and said, you know, we gotta raise this game. You're right, Ryan, and we will raise the game. So, well, anybody, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. As I said, we won't. I think Jeremy Ashton said we're not allowed to take any more weeks off. So.
Matt,
unfortunately, we're done. We're done with weeks off forever.
Wow.
That's
this
not
sounds
true,
intense.
By the way. That's
sounds
not true,
intense.
By the way. But we will be back next week and the week after, so how's that? That's something. All right.
I feel a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah, I do too. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. You can email the show at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com if you have something you want to tell us, share with us. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/riseandshout, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!